This is the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President, Tony Perkins.
Hello, and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm David Salkeld, and I'm sitting in for Tony, who's taking some time away from the microphone. Although it may not seem like it, across the country there are men and women on the state level who are more than willing to stand for the constituents' religious freedom and rights of privacy. On Thursday, the North Carolina governor doubled down in his support to protect the privacy of women by not allowing men to use women's restroom facilities in his state, a measure that had passed in Charlotte. Tony had mentioned on Wednesday that New York Governor Andrew Cuomo is banning non-essential travel to North Carolina. On Fox and Friends, Governor McCrory mentioned that many people have actually left New York to make North Carolina their home. People want those in office to protect them, and that's exactly what McCrory did here. The Lieutenant Governor of North Carolina, Dan Forrest, joined Tony on Thursday to talk about it.
Governor, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, thanks so much for having me on, and welcome to the great state of North Carolina. Other end of the state from you today. I'm up in the mountains. That's why I dropped you. We're kind of out in the middle of nowhere out here.
Well, I'm down on the coast. I'd love to be in the mountains, but I'm down here for the night speaking at an event here in Wilmington, and glad to be in the state. And I was a little concerned. I thought maybe the plane would be empty flying into the state, but it was actually full. It was hard to find a seat. They apparently did not get Cuomo's memo, or they got it and didn't care. But you guys are pushing back. You're not just being silent. You're saying, hey, you're calling these guys out for their hypocrisy. Explain.
Yeah, well, you know, these are just straight out of the leftist playbook, right? I mean, we were talking in our office, in fact, just yesterday. We need to just come up with a checklist. You know, it's the same playbook they went by in Houston. It's the same playbook they went by when we did the marriage amendments. It's the same cast of characters for each of those events, too. It's the same companies, the same CEOs, obviously being driven by HRC and their, you know, lobbyists, and certainly being driven by these companies' HR departments and their diversity consultants and that sort of thing. So, you know, it's the same routine over and over again. And, yeah, it's just bully tactics. It's the unfortunate part, Tony, as you know, is it's just a bunch of lies. And that really is unfortunate. It's hard enough to pass a good piece of legislation that's doing the right thing to protect women and children that really everybody believes in, right? But then you have to spend all of your time and energy and money getting the message out and telling people what you really did, because these bullies come in and then they try to spin the story and lie about what you've done.
Yeah, we were actually having that discussion yesterday about how it's so much easier for the left to do this because they're not bound by truth. Truth
right.
means nothing to them. It's all relative, and they can define it as whatever they want. And so they can say whatever they want to, even though the text of a piece of legislation, as you all passed, is very clear and straightforward. They turn it into something that it's not.
Yeah, and it becomes a battle with even people on your side sometimes calling you, going, what did you guys do? You know, and we've had people that are even in elected offices who still don't know the whole story about what we did because they haven't read the bill. I've talked to CEOs and executives, Tony, that I called after this was done. They sent out, you know, memos to their employees saying we disagree with the discriminatory policy of North Carolina, really trying to appease a certain group of people within their company. So I'd call these executives and say, have you read the bill? And the answer has been no. I haven't read the bill. I got this memo from our HR department, which obviously came from human rights activists. And, you know, it's really, really unfortunate. But that's the battle that we're facing. You know, the governor and I are having to spend a significant amount of time calling executives with companies in our state saying, listen, we have a better anti-discrimination policy in North Carolina than we have ever had. It is broader than federal policy. So, you know, it's a real shame, because if these companies did like North Carolina prior to this legislation, they should like North Carolina now, because absolutely nothing has changed. We just struck down an ordinance that said men are not allowed to walk into women's restrooms and women's changing facilities, or girls' locker rooms and girls' changing facilities. And that's really all our bill did.
Well, and what it did is it prohibited the government from forcing private businesses to do that. which is what they were doing in the city of Charlotte. They were the government was forcing businesses into this.
Exactly. We said, you know, a government shouldn't be in that business of telling businesses what to do. If a business wants to have a, you know, a single sex bathroom, they can do that anyway. If the NBA wanted to do that, they could have done that anyway. The NFL wants to, they can do that. It doesn't make any difference. But the city of Charlotte cannot create law that tells businesses how they have to handle their accommodations for their employees. And in fact, in North Carolina, the state is responsible for public accommodation laws. The cities are not. So what Charlotte did was unconstitutional. So we had to handle it from a constitutional standpoint to let the 652 counties and municipalities in our state know that the state is responsible for that, and that's what we did.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. My guest, the Lieutenant Governor of North Carolina, Dan Forrest. In your discussion with some of these, you don't have to use any company names or executive names, but is a part of this their public posture to appease the elements within their corporations that are clamoring for this and are very vocal, and it's more of just trying to appease them than it is the business actually taking a position?
Yeah, absolutely it is. I mean, listen, I mean, obviously, nobody likes discrimination. You know, we don't like discrimination. That's why we passed an anti-discrimination bill. That's what that's what HB2 was. Nobody likes discrimination, so it's easy to stand up and say, we don't like anybody being discriminated against. Well, our bill does not discriminate against anyone. And in fact, the Charlotte ordinance was amazingly discriminatory against especially women and girls who no longer basically had the freedom to walk into a restroom and know that they were going to be safe and secure in that restroom without a man walking in or a pedophile or a predator walking into that. That's really discriminatory if you want to talk about discrimination there. But no, I think that that is their take. And they've one particularly said, well, you know, they have a really strong lobby. And and so, you know, I think we're the place, as you just said, where, you know, certainly for them, truth is all relative. There is no absolute truth anymore. So they can bend the rules and twist it however they want to push their agenda.
But the public, the citizens of North Carolina, like we saw in Houston, Texas, they basically understand common sense. I mean, when all of the, you know, the falsities and all of the smoke and everything is blown away, and you actually just talk about the facts of what we are talking about, what we're discussing, they say, mm-hmm. Well, that makes perfect sense. Why would we want to do that?
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, as soon as you tell the truth to people, I know there's always going to be people that just aren't going to believe you no matter what, you know, for whatever reason, because of your position, because of your political affiliation, whatever, just because they believe the ideology of the other side and they're really trying to push that agenda.
Right.
But yes, that is very true. I've never seen anything like this in my life. We've had, I did an interview yesterday on CNBC, and we just kind of, we posted that, well, even before we posted it, people that just saw it. We had hundreds and hundreds of calls in favor of that interview. And we had, I think, five is what we counted against. And we had calls from states all over the United States calling our office saying thank you for speaking the truth about this. So it's overwhelming support for real basic common sense policy that says men are not supposed to go in women's restrooms and locker rooms and shower rooms and changing facilities. So it's absolutely been overwhelming.
If you'd like to find out more about this topic or about North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest, simply go to TonyPerkins.com. Coming up next, Daniel Horowitz joins us to talk about his article titled The Raging Fire Against Religious Liberty. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch right after this.
The 2016 presidential election is just 9 months away, and FRC Action is here to help prepare you with the Values Voter Presidential Voter Guide. Determining which presidential candidate shares our most cherished values can be difficult amidst the media spin and political rhetoric. The FRC Action Presidential Voter Guide simplifies the process by compiling the candidate's position on Planned Parenthood funding, the future of natural marriage, religious liberty, and more. Visit frcaction.org/2016 to view the voter guide. Again, that's frcaction.org/2016.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld, and while Tony is taking some time off this weekend, we're sharing a couple of the best interviews from Washington Watch Live from this past week. I know many of you are locked in and paying attention to what is going on across the country regarding our freedom of religion, but this week we've seen attacks increase. We've discussed the win in North Carolina where the state legislators passed and the governor signed into law protections for the privacy of children and women using school and public bathrooms, showers, and locker rooms in the state. Well, now in far left-leaning states like New York, Governor Cuomo has banned non-essential travel to North Carolina as punishment. Tony spoke earlier this week with Congressman David Bratt of Virginia about the bill passed by the state legislature cutting funding to Planned Parenthood in order to go to clinics that actually helped women. Folks, this is where we see elections truly having consequences. Senior editor for Conservative Review, Daniel Horowitz, joined Tony to discuss his latest article on this subject, The Raging Fire Against Religious Liberty.
Daniel, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Great to be back with you. And yes, believe it or not, there are more important things than the latest soap opera with Donald Trump.
It's reality TV at its worst. But let's talk about this because you really encapsulate what's been taking place here in the last couple of weeks on the front of religious freedom. And you put this in the historical context of we have one of the greatest threats facing us right now that if we don't deal with it and deal with it successfully, everything we care about could be lost.
Exactly. We've been like the frog in the boiling pot of water here, except, you know, they've turned up the temperature more precipitously really over the last 10 years, and the left is just scoring victory after victory. They are now successfully doing things, and, you know, without eliciting any GOP reaction, whereas 10, 15 years ago, this stuff would have been opposed by Democrats. And like you said, with the transgender bathroom, and now across the country, either courts or state governments forcing individuals with their own private property, involuntary servitude, their own business, their own livelihood, to service things that are contrary to their religious consciences. And again, we're not talking about things that are kind of voodoo or some obscure religion. We're talking about things that have been condemned by every major religion. Our country is founded on these principles. They're not nothing obscure, nothing new. It's the other side that's coming with new foreign values. You know, and even if people think times have changed, well, that's fine. You can do what you want, but you can't force people to use their private property or private business against their consciousness. I know in my article, James Madison referred to religious conscience as the most sacred of property rights. And now we don't even have Republicans that are willing to hold the ground Democrats held just one generation ago. So this is an all hands on deck situation where, you know, this should be at the top of the list. This should be, front and center in the GOP debate, in the GOP primary election. I know there are no debates, unfortunately, now. And that's the problem. We're talking about all this silly stuff, but this is really the battle. And it all ties into the judiciary and the Supreme Court and the battle for the Supreme Court where, you know, we now have pretty much really five justices that don't believe in religious liberty and four that certainly believe in it, to its fullest extent. And we got a problem here. And you know, we are in need of some major discussions here about the role of federalism, the role of the federal government, and the role of the courts in preserving fundamental rights. But we have a scenario, Tony, where fundamental rights have been flipped on their head, the most foundational. And this is what I go through in the article just to show how, you know, religious liberty is really the foundation, top issue that was the impetus for our founding. That's taken a back seat to new court-created rights that were unknown to anyone until this generation.
And Daniel Horowitz, you make the argument in your piece that, as you just stated, that religious liberty is the foundation. And once we, if we think we can, it's not that big of a deal. If you lose religious freedom, you've lost everything else with it. It's just a matter of time.
This is what I wish some of our libertarian friends would realize. A lot of people said, "Well, you know what? I'm not that religious, or I don't care." Well, this has nothing to do with religion. You know, we could put aside the fact that obviously our country was founded on Judeo-Christian values. It's founded on the notion that government would not just be neutral or indifferent to religion, but believe it is a very integral part of our national character, although no one would be compelled to worship any religion, any god. But we're even beyond that. We're talking about private property rights. And you know what I find interesting? And this is where you see this is rooted in a one-sided progressive agenda. It's nothing to do with, let people do what they want. Because when the shoe's on the other foot, when the practitioner of the religion is not the business owner, but the employee, if that employee is a Muslim, you find a very different story. So there's been cases where you had Muslim truck drivers that refused to deliver, transport beer. They said it was against their religion. And the left and Obama's EEOC, Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, was totally championing that. The courts were championing it, forcing the company to settle. And the problem there is, no, they have fundamental rights flipped. James Madison always said that you're entitled, he was the biggest champion of religious liberty, so long as you don't trespass private property. That's the way he explained it in his essay on private property. And, Tony, I don't work on Saturday. I don't have a right to force myself into someone else's business and say, hey, there's a substantial burden on what you're doing if I don't work on Saturday. That's a problem. But you got to accommodate me. No, you don't have an unalienable right to someone else's employment in someone else's workplace. And a Muslim doesn't have a right to, illicit employment at someone's place and say, I'm not going to transport, one of the priority goods or, do a certain service that's integral to the job. But yet when the shoe is on the other foot, when you have a Christian business owner or farm owner, suddenly they're forced to violate their consciences with their property rights. So again, this is not about unalienable rights. This is about man-made privileges and preferences for protected classes.
And trampling upon those fundamental rights that we've long held in this country as not only sacred, but fundamental. Daniel Horowitz, thanks so much for being with us. As always, enjoy the conversation and a great piece you've written here. I agree with you.
Thanks so much for having me.
You can find out more about Daniel Horowitz when you visit tonyperkins.com. We'll be right back with more from Washington Watch right after this. Don't go away.
Are you prepared to stand for real change? Mark your calendar for the Values Voter Summit on September 9th through 11th in Washington, D.C. Join thousands of like-minded Americans who envision a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers at the Values Voter Summit have included Senators Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio, House Speaker Paul Ryan, Governor Mike Huckabee, Laura Ingraham, Kirk Cameron, Dr. Ben Carson, Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity, Ollie North, Mark Levin, and many others. In addition, there will be ample opportunity to network and meet with organizations and attendees that share a Christian worldview and to discuss important issues like religious liberty, the sanctity of life, natural marriage, national security, government overreach, and more. On September 9th through 11th, stand with us and fight for the renewal of this great nation. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information and to watch last year's event. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. In 2013, the Congressional Budget Office was trying to estimate what enrollment figures would be for Obamacare in 2016. They were only off the mark by 24 million people. The CBO projected in 2013 that by this year, 201 million people would have private health insurance. That number now sits at 177 million. The only conclusion can be that Obamacare has actually lowered the number of people who have private health insurance. 3 years later, this law is still burdening the American people. Senior fellow at the Hudson Institute and author of An Alternative to Obamacare, Jeffrey Anderson joined Tony this week to talk about a great article he wrote on the CBO numbers for the Weekly Standard.
Jeff, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony.
All right, your article really breaks down the CBO's projection fiasco. I mean, they completely missed the numbers. Why is this important?
Well, it's important because people in Washington tend to treat the CBO's word as gospel, and in reality, it's just closer to a wild guess. And I think one of the biggest problems is the CBO never really looks backward. They're like somebody who handicaps a horse race and says, oh, I like this horse and this horse, and then we never get to hear how the race actually finished. I mean, trying to find an actual published cost figure for Obamacare, for example, so far is next to impossible. I mean, nobody bothers to look at such things. So originally, the CBO said people would enroll in private insurance plans under Obamacare. There would be more of that than there would be people getting enrolled in Medicaid. And now we find that it's very much the reverse, with Obamacare is pretty much just a massive Medicaid expansion. And
well, I mean, we were promised like everything. I mean, cats and dogs would lay down together, and I mean, all this other stuff too. But isn't this in reality? And I don't want to just focus on how messed up it is, but how we get out of this, and that's what you lay out in your article. What needs to be proposed going forward? But let me ask you a fundamental question, though, Jeff. Is this not endemic to really? A planned economy? I mean, when government tries to take on something that's better left to the free market, isn't this what happens? They never can really get a handle on what the numbers will be or should be?
No, I think that's absolutely right, Tony. They won't, and in addition, it tends to just continue to balloon government. It's not surprising that a massive 2,400-page collection of liberty-sapping mandates would result in the government run part of insurance getting bigger and bigger, Medicaid in particular. This is not what the American people ever wanted. It's pretty clear 6 years ago when the Democrats passed Obamacare without a single Republican vote that the American people did not want it. And President Obama said, he pretty much told the Democratic House members, go ahead and fall on your sword. We need this. And it's probably costing the House and the Senate, and remains to be seen about the White House. But I think it's very clearly time to, you mentioned the way forward, I think it's very clearly time for Republicans, for conservatives to put forward an alternative to Obamacare. It's not that hard to do much better.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Jeff Anderson, my guest, he has a great piece that he's written on the CBO's numbers regarding Obamacare, but also contained in this article is that way forward, which is something that should be discussed and is being discussed. Republicans in the House are actually cobbling together their own reform of Obamacare, because we're really within a stone's throw of seeing Obamacare repealed if we elect a Republican president. And by the way, you can read his article. Go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. You lay out some clear principles as to what they should be looking at as they repeal Obamacare and replace it with patient-friendly, market-based solutions.
Yeah, I think the real root problem with our healthcare system going back 70 years is that the federal government has had its foot on the scale and has given a big tax preference to employer-based healthcare. And people who go buy health insurance on their own, typically don't get a tax break at all. And that has not changed under Obamacare. And so the way to fix the problem is, I mean, first and foremost, repeal all of Obamacare. But in order to make that happen, an alternative needs to be sitting there ready and on the table, ready to go. And so ending this long-standing inequity in the tax code, I think, is a key, but it needs to be done in a smart way, both intelligently, politically, and also policy-wise. And so I think it's important not to disrupt the typical Americans' employer-based health insurance plan. Don't change the tax treatment for that, but close the tax loophole that says that the more expensive your employer-based plan is, the more you save in taxes. And at the same time, I think it's past the time to offer a tax break in the individual market,
right,
for people who buy insurance on their own.
By the way, Jeff, that aspect of allowing, and it's what was called the Cadillac plans with some of the especially the unions that offered that has a tendency to drive up overall health care costs when you really don't care because it's a write-off for the company, so they just soon give it to their employees that way because they get to save the money. But it has an inflationary effect upon health care costs.
Right, exactly. It definitely does. I mean, anytime you can get a good tax-free, it's tempting to buy more of it. But I think the key is to fix it on the people who go out and buy insurance on their own should get a tax break if their next door neighbor is getting a tax break for their employer based insurance. And so I think it's important that such a tax break be implemented and that it not be one that picks winners and losers. It ought to be something that goes to everybody. It should not be income tested, in other words, which would be very, very different than Obamacare. And it should be an actual tax break, probably a tax credit, but not a direct subsidy to insurance companies, which is what Obamacare offers. So I think
how do you get then, because we're almost out of time, how do you get, as we've seen people pushed off of private health care onto this massive expansion of Medicaid, government health care, how do we get them back into private health care?
Well, for starters, I think we ought to rein Medicaid back in and say the eligibility is going to be based on pre-Obamacare law, so just wipe that off the books. And then I think if you end this tax inequality and allow the individual market to operate on the same on a level playing field with the employer-based market, things will start to happen in a good way. You'll see the individual markets start to be revitalized and become vibrant, and people will shop for value. They'll start to demand to see prices for things. It'll start to work like an actual functioning market.
And so the bottom line, we're up against a break here, but bottom line is for the average family out there who's been seeing about 20% annual increase in their health care insurance cost, this could help contain that and even possibly bring it down?
Yes, absolutely, and give them real choice and an opportunity to go out and buy insurance on their own that's affordable.
All right. Jeff Anderson, thanks so much for joining us. Interesting piece. Thanks for discussing it with us.
Thank you, Tony.
You can find out more about today's guests, including the article by Jeffrey Anderson, when you go to tonyperkins.com. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234.